Three, two, one. Welcome to another edition of the Kids Ministry Collective Podcast. My name's Tom Bump, and I'm your host. I want to say thank you for taking time to stop and listen to this podcast. I hope that you'll enjoy it and be blessed by it. Our sponsor for this edition of the KMC Podcast is KMC Coaching. Everybody does better with a coach. There's no doubt about it. One of the life-changing decisions I made years ago was to hire myself a coach who helped me see things from a whole new perspective. And that's also why the KMC Coaching was born, because my coach challenged me to coach other leaders, to help leaders that are hurting, struggling, feeling alone, feeling just trapped in the way they're leading, being a little bit discouraged by that. If you're one of those leaders, or maybe in 2020, you just want to develop some areas that you've never tried before, hiring a coach is something that's very important to do, and it will be a game changer. Some people don't think it's affordable for them, but I want to tell you, KMC Coaching is designed to be affordable for anybody that wants to invest in themselves. It's so cool to see even senior leaders investing in their children's pastors. And I've had a couple of opportunities to speak to some senior pastors who've shared with me that their kids' ministers are doing so much better because of hiring a coach. So take a look at KMC Coaching for yourself. It might be the program just for you. So head over to kmccoach.net and check it out. Schedule your free 30-minute interview where we can talk about where you are and where you want to go, and just see how KMC Coaching might be able to help you. I believe it will. I know coaching has changed my life and my leadership forever. And my goal as a lead coach in KMC Coaching is to help you lead more to reach more. Now, in this edition of the Kid Ministry Collective Podcast, my guest is Tricia Peach. She's a good friend of mine, and she shares with us a brand new book that she's written, where she's done a lot of research over some time for her doctorate degree. And it's all about why leaders are quitting. And one of the things that Tricia and I both are very passionate about is seeing leaders stay in it for the long haul. And I so appreciate her sharing her heart with us in this edition of the KMC Podcast. So sit back, grab a cup of coffee, and enjoy this edition. I'm sure it will be a blessing to you. And thanks for listening to the KMC. Welcome back, Tricia Peach. I'm glad to have you back.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited. It's good to be back.
Yeah. Well, it has been a little while. Hey, introduce yourself. There may be a few people that aren't familiar with who you are, but I would love for them to get to know you, because it has been a little while since you've been on the KMC. So tell us a little bit about what you're up to.
Oh, no problem at all. My name is Tricia Peach. I am the author of Your Children's Ministry from Scratch and Your Children's Ministry Beyond Basics. I was a full-time staff children's pastor at a pretty large church for 17 years, and I now travel and teach out of my books. I'm also a doctoral candidate, and my focus of study has been why so many pastors quit ministry. Mm. And of course, as I outline in the newer book, it's pretty staggering. 4 out of 5 quit and leave ministry forever by year 5. So that's after graduation.
Yeah.
Wow. All that money, all that time, all of that work, the feeling that they're called, and then not even making it 5 years, and then they go work in a different field. So I wanted to know why.
Yeah.
So that's me. That's what I've been up to. This year I've done a lot of traveling. I've been in Orlando and Mississippi, and it's my first time in the Bahamas at the Kids Ministry Conference. That was great.
Cool. Cool.
Busy but fun. I have been married for 20 years, and I have 2 beautiful teenagers, my 16-year-old son and my 14-year-old daughter. And they actually traveled with me quite a bit this year, which was fun.
Hey, that's awesome. That's awesome. And you shared with me a while ago that you had started your doctorate program, and you were starting to research this idea of why are leaders quitting? And I know, because you and I have talked off air and at conferences that we've gotten together at. In fact, I remember talking about this at CPC a couple years ago, that we were talking about this idea, and you started sharing some of the idea of this book and well, mainly the research first. What drew your attention really to this idea, because obviously people weren't there hearing our discussion. What drew your attention to the idea of wanting to research why leaders were quitting? And what was it that caught your attention and why did you begin to research it?
I know that when I was a freshman in Bible college, they told us a lot of these statistics. Now, that was a long time ago. Don't want to say how long, but
they you're said, not that old. Come on.
I would say these are the statistics. And of course, they say you want to know anything, ask a college freshman because they know everything.
Oh, yeah.
Well, yeah, we were saying, well, that might have been you guys, but now we have arrived and we're so awesome. But unfortunately, the statistics seem to hold true even for my graduating class. And what bothered me about it was so many of the ones that dropped out had been so passionate and very gifted. We're not talking about people who couldn't preach. These were not individuals that could not do the work of the ministry or who didn't care. What I was noticing was, unfortunately, there were some terrible church situations. They kind of got chewed up and spit out is what happened. And what I had been hearing, the theory, the going theory had been and sometimes is that ministry doesn't pay enough. And so they dropped out because they weren't making enough money. Mm-hmm. Or took too many school loans. Well, I suppose, but, you know, I'm a pastor's kid. I knew not going into this for the gigantic paycheck. I told people, you know, if that's why you got into ministry, you had the wrong guidance counselor. I'm sure you had a surprise or two.
Yep.
But I think there are a lot bigger reasons. And my research, including the interviews, everything I could read, you know, I did a literary review where I literally read anything and everything I could read on this topic. The top 9 reasons I outline in my book, not one of them was money.
Hmm.
Wow. Unless you count there's one chapter on certain pitfalls and scandals that ended it for them. And one of those was money mismanagement, church money mismanagement. Uh-huh. But that not one of them cited, I didn't make enough money. It was a lot of other things that they talked about or that I found. And I thought we need to discuss this because we're bleeding them out at a time when we need these people on the front lines. And I think the excuse, I'd actually talked to Brian Dollar a little bit about this. I said, the excuse I hear is, well, if they left ministry, they just were never really called in the first place. So it's fine.
Right. I've heard that.
And I disagree with this because you look at the fields being so white for harvest. They said 80% of the church's mission field right now is children.
Right.
I refuse to believe that in this situation, God is not calling people.
Right.
I don't believe that. That's not the God I know. I do not believe that God is just not calling people. I believe he is calling people. And I think some of them they're having terrible, terrible experiences in ministry. And it's like something breaks in them.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of get, like I said, chewed up and spit out.
Right.
And it's easier to blame the person and say, well, if they were really called, they'd still be here. But we as Christians and the church universal, we have to take some responsibility here. There's some things systemically that are happening that we need to address because we're losing really good ministers. And I do believe God will hold us accountable for how we treat each other,
how we
treat other Christians, but definitely our pastors.
Yes. Yes.
And when you're losing that many pastors, something is wrong. Something's very wrong.
Right.
It needs to be addressed and steps need to be taken to correct it.
Yeah.
Some of the stories in the book, I hesitated because I thought some of these are so raw and I didn't include them all. But I thought, no, we need to be real about the situation and some of the things that have been happening. And I have heard people say, no, we're really glad you included it because I thought I was the only one.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's really nice to know that I wasn't, that I'm not alone.
Yes.
That there's not something wrong with me.
Yes.
Because I went through this experience at our church.
Right. I think that's such a powerful truth, and we're going to dig into some of that a little bit more, because I want to kind of walk through the book a little bit to give some, the listeners an idea of what's in the book and that kind of thing. And when you look at the content of Why Leaders Quit, which if you haven't caught on, that's the title of the book. I guess I didn't really say that at the beginning, but you look at some of the warning signs. And I think this is good because I was just talking to a friend of mine about this, interview, I think it's significant that you walk through this idea of looking at it because, one, it reminds us as a community that we need to be watching for these, not just in our own lives, but for others around us. And this is why networking and gathering together as groups of leaders across lines, even denominationally, that we're in the same group, the same club, so to speak. If you're in ministry, part-time, full-time, it doesn't matter. If you're leading, you need to be watching each other for this because you hit on some things as some warning signs. And so what I want to kind of think about is what struck you as some of the most significant warning signs that you saw as you researched?
The number one that I saw in just about every case, at least where I interviewed the pastor themselves, was an overwhelming sense of apathy. And the best way I can describe it, because I've experienced this myself, when you are nearing a point of no return, when you are you're burnout, you're overstressed, you kind of go into a survival mode where you're going through the motions. And you know you're in trouble when you just don't care anymore. And by that I mean, five people came to the altar this Sunday and you're like, okay. 10 people didn't show up to church that Sunday. Okay. Whether the outreach succeeds or doesn't, you don't care anymore. You've just ceased to care. And it gets really bad when you can't even fake it anymore. Wow. When you can't bring yourself to force the excitement, even when you're supposed to. And I think when you're on a staff or you're in the congregation, you start seeing a pastor showing signs of apathy that they're not able to hide. Something's wrong. Something's wrong. They may be way overstressed. They could be burnout. They could be fighting too many illnesses. They may have had one too many battles recently. But when you have a pastor or a minister or a key volunteer who is not totally excited about that ministry, and I don't mean one day, I mean it just keeps hanging on, there's a problem that you got to get to the bottom of it.
Yeah.
And right along with that, there's no vision anymore for where you're at. This would come to the forefront for me if I was planning, because usually for me, I'd sit down and do a 3-year plan like that. What we were going to talk about, what curriculums we were going to use, what sermons I was going to preach on, all of it would flow onto the page. This, I would say, God-given creativity, and we'd be excited about it. And, oh, we're going to do this outreach in the summer, and we're going to do this for Christmas. I knew I was in trouble if I would sit down with that calendar and just nothing. Nothing.
Yeah.
And people would say, what are we going to do this summer for VBS? And I would think, I don't know. And again, that apathy would go with of, and I don't care. How do we survive it? That is a problem, because if you're the one leading this ministry, you're supposed to be excited about it. You're supposed to come in with a fresh vision. And if that's not there, that can be a major warning sign that something is very, very wrong and it shouldn't be ignored.
Right.
In the book, I highly encourage people that if they have a good relationship with their senior pastor, and this is key.
Yes. Uh-huh.
If they have a good relationship with that lead pastor, go in and explain these frustrations and try to talk about solutions and what needs to happen. Sometimes you're in the wrong position and they might say, you know what? You need a bit more of a challenge. We're going to move you to family ministry now, or we're going to add in college ministries or something, or something that you're really passionate about. I would say if you are not on good terms with the senior pastor, then you may need to have your ducks in a row where you're going to be going before you share that.
Yeah. Which is sad because
it's sad.
That shouldn't be the reaction that you get. And I think this is part of what I think Dale even brought up in his article was that leaders are too, you know, if you admit vulnerabilities, oftentimes that's a license. Some people think that's a license to get rid of you. That is the worst thing that you could do. And so, all right, well, as you know, like I say, the readers can dig into you. You give off a lot of different solid warning signs. So if a leader senses something inside of them or they see it in another ministry per leader's life, what are some things that they can do? Obviously, if somebody can't go to a senior pastor and stuff, you know, that's going to be a problem. But if you're a leader and you're feeling that struggle, or if you see it in a friend that's in ministry, what do you say would be some good advice to them?
I would say we do have a problem, especially in the American church, on speaking the truth in love. And we do not show our emotion all the time. Now, I'm from Wisconsin. I grew up with that whole Minnesota nice. So we don't say anything. We stuff it down. We stuff it down. We stuff it down. And then all of a sudden it's, I quit. I'm leaving. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the senior leader goes, wait, where did this come from? I thought everything was going great.
Right.
But, you know, you can only stuff it down for so long. You can hide it and hide it and hide it. And sometimes we think we're hiding it really well, and it's not so much. Another major warning sign that goes right along with this question is emotional outbursts. Right. And these emotional outbursts, you can hide them at first, but not forever. And eventually the congregation begins to pick up on this because it's abnormal, or they're going, okay, whoa, like a major anger outburst. It may not even be related to what you're really upset about, but they're going, I saw this happen once with a staff member who just exploded over, we're just going, what was that? Everybody was just stunned. And it was something else entirely that he'd been hiding and hiding and hiding and hiding. And eventually it just boom. And these anger outbursts kept coming, and we really should have talked to him. Yeah. We should have had some conversations. And again, everybody is afraid of confrontation, but what he needed was help. You know, his marriage was in trouble and he needed some help.
Yeah.
And I think had he gotten some help, had he had some ministry there early on, instead, we just had these little mini anger rage outbursts that seemed to make no sense. And later, you know, ended up out of ministry permanently. But we were afraid to sit down and have a tough conversation with him of what is going on? What's happening in your life right now? You're really angry a lot lately.
Right.
For me, it wasn't anger so much as I think one time they were playing a kid's movie and I started crying. And then I had to ask myself later, what about this? Okay, I have really been stuffing my feelings on this. I was very hurt by these words that were said by this certain individual, mm-hmm. and I need to deal with this.
Right.
I think, again, Americans were taught to ignore emotions. We're taught to stuff them down. But sometimes I think God's trying to tell you something. Your body and your soul are trying to tell you something through your emotions.
Yeah.
And we need to confront it in ourselves, find out what's at the bottom of that. And if it's another staff person, to have a loving conversation, not to say, what's wrong with you? Mm-hmm. And you're out of here, but how can we help you? How can we help you stay in ministry for the long haul here? Because I don't know what's going on here, but I think another one is if they start being AWOL. They're missing for important things, and you're wondering, where is this person?
Yeah.
Where are they? Another one would be if they're constantly sick. And I don't mean like a disease. I mean they're never, ever well. They're constantly with a cold, and now they've got the flu, and then another cold, and that can be a major sign of burnout, that they're mm-hmm. burning the candle at both ends.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if you see your pastor is always sick, you may need to sit down with them and say, how do we get you a day off here? How do we get you to take your vacation days?
Right. And I think that's why it's important for the community to keep an eye on each other and help each other out and reach out. When you see those signs, reach out. And then hopefully, you know, I mean, if I don't know how many senior leaders actually listen to our little podcast, but I would hope that more senior leadership, even for themselves, would find a way, and we would create an atmosphere in today's church that leadership can be vulnerable enough to say, hey, I'm hurting and I need a break for a while. I need to step back on a couple of things. And hand off a few things so that I can take a breath. You know, I've been one that has advocated for years that every church should have a mandatory policy that every 5 years you get a couple months off paid sabbatical time.
Smart. That's
where
excellent.
You can unplug. I mean, I've seen recently that I just happened to read an article where a church actually did do this for their pastors. And I've been in a couple churches that had it. And it was a life-saving thing for me. I happened to benefit from it. But I've been in other churches where they look at me like I'm crazy. And, you know, why would you need that? You know, if you're loving what you're doing, you shouldn't have any problems. Well, ministry is messy and draining exhausting. And again, that's why sometimes leaders come in. And that's a big deal. Transitions in ministry can be draining. And that's one of the things that you talk about as another kind of big reason why people leave and walk away is they get caught up in this mess of an unhealthy transition. And so, you know, you share in the book about transitions in churches and how it can lead to those leaders. Why do you think it's so true that this happens? And why are we seeing a lot of it? That when there's a leadership transition, it's like a bomb goes off on staff.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, I realize different denominations have different rules and traditions. I know part of the Church of God, it's my mom's family's denomination, they will pick them up and move them every 3 years, which is...
Wow, that's hard.
It seems, very difficult to me and to them. Now, my parents are Assemblies of God, so they the church votes. So then you never know. You just don't know. You hope. And then, at least in the Assemblies, if the senior pastor leaves, whether fired or voluntarily leaves, all of the other staff is also terminated. So in my case, each time that a senior pastor has retired, yes, I had to turn in my resignation, but because of the shortage of children's pastors, they picked me right back up. But I have seen that be devastating, where the whole staff is gone. And then the congregation, not only are they losing their senior leader, they lose the whole entire staff. But the reasoning behind it is that a pastor should have the freedom to choose their own team. My experience has been I have seen way too many unhealthy transitions, probably more than healthy transitions. And I know we all don't think that way. We all want to be at a church for 60 years and retire there, but that is not typically the reality.
Right.
That's a great goal. It is not typically the reality. It's something like less than 2% of pastors get to stay at one church the whole time where they retire. So usually there are going to be transitions involved. The problem comes in for one big major reason, and that's something I call in my book enmeshment. And that is, there is no separation in a pastor's life between work, family, church, friends, family, interests, hobbies. Everything is church. Everything. So what that means is when a pastor leaves a position at a church, usually that also means they're losing their income. They're losing most of their friends, any support network that they had within the church. Mm-hmm. They're losing people that they actually kind of thought of as family, people that were kind of family to them. They lose their place of worship. That's huge. Yep. They lose their church family. Their kids lose the place that they went to kids' church and the place where their friends were.
Mm-hmm.
It's their whole social network. And sometimes, you know, that's where they'll figure out where to get their car repaired, where they'll figure out, you know, that's that whole support system is gone. Now, if my husband were to leave his IT job, which he does not want to, he likes that job. If he did, more than likely, we would not leave our house or the kids' school, or he would try to find another IT job right here. Yeah. And we would not change churches. We'd still be going to our same church. But every time I have left a position, it is the total uprooting
right.
of everything. And then you plant again. And I can't imagine how people do that every 2 to 3 years.
Right.
The average, as you know, for a kids pastor is 3 years. A youth pastor, it's 18 months. Senior pastor, I think, is 4 years. That one kind of goes up and down. But for me, that would just be very, very difficult to keep uprooting.
Yeah. Well, and there's no doubt. I mean, I don't have scientific data, but I can, after watching churches and being parts of lots of transitions, there's no doubt in my mind that we create transition fatigue in churches. Where literally, I think that's what happens to the laity, the average churchgoer. Sometimes that's part of why they get so disenfranchised with the church.
Yes.
is because they're tired of seeing a rotating door. And you know, I live close to Cleveland, Ohio, and I have a living, breathing example of what happens when you are ascribed to this philosophy of change all the time. And that's the Cleveland Browns. They can't stay with a coach for very long, a quarterback for very long. And literally it's crazy how even the players, they're one of their best offensive linemen just a couple years ago, left the team and went to another place. And basically he said, look, I have to leave because I can't take all the change anymore. I just want to go to a place that sticks with a system. So
Yes. There's
no doubt that's something that can really be devastating. I come from more of a Baptist type background, non-denom background. And yeah, there are some churches where, yeah, you have that. There's other churches where, you know, it is that, no, the staff stays on and the new guy has to fit in, new gal has to fit in with the current staff. So, and that's a whole nother podcast. We could probably argue and debate over, over what's the best model for those kind of things. But I do agree with you that there's definitely, I think that's why a lot of people who sit in the second chair, third chair of ministry do walk away, because it can be such an unhealthy process if it's not handed off well. And unfortunately, we do hear more about the horror stories than the healthy stories. Well, you also talk about one of the significant reasons for quitting is this idea, and we agree on this one for sure, that there's a lot of leaders that come in with a starry-eyed, we're going to change the world. It's my generation now. We're going to show up the previous generations. And hey, that's cool. Come in with that. I love that passion. But they also come in sometimes with very unhealthy expectations.
Yes.
And they may, what I call, see the front of stage stuff, all the glitz and the glamour and the fun and the accolades and the cheers. But some of them that are coming into ministry now have never been behind the quote unquote curtain. They don't have any realistic idea of what it takes behind the scenes to do what a children's pastor does sometimes. And I think that's where all of a sudden it can be shocking. It can be insanely challenging. It can blow apart their whole reality of what they thought. And that can be a real big problem. And I love how you called it. You called it role dysphoria.
Yes.
I love this. So unpack that term and how you came up. What do you see, that happens with these leaders that come in with these expectations? And then when it blows up, they're out. They completely check out.
Oh, absolutely. I think we have a picture in our head what it is going to be like to be a pastor. I remember this guy, again, when we were freshmen in one of our preaching classes, he was chewing the rest of us out because he was saying, well, Bible says God added to the church daily, so I'm going to have one convert every day because otherwise you're doing something wrong. And if the board doesn't like this outreach, I'll just tell them how it's going to be. And I fell over laughing, you know, as a pastor's kid. He's like, what? And I said, well, you'll tell them once. Better make it a good speech.
Nope.
You'll tell them one time.
First and last speech.
Yeah, your first and last speech. I just thought to myself, how many, this is now, I'm thinking back on this, how many of our new pastors come in with completely unrealistic expectations. Like you said, they've only seen it from one side and they think they know what they're getting into, but not so much. A good example of this would be many, many children's pastors I've talked to through the years. They thought they were going to be on stage with a puppet 90% of the time with the children.
Right.
And some of them said to me, well, I'm in kids ministry because I don't want to talk to adults. And I usually say, well, I'm sorry, but a lot of your time is going to be spent talking to adults.
It is.
That's the reality versus the expectation.
Mm-hmm.
What I found as a staff person in children's ministry, I was spending a good 80% of my time doing administrative duties.
Right.
The budget had to be put out in the Excel spreadsheet, 12 pages long. I had to have who's going to be in each one of these positions for four services. What are we doing about space logistics on Wednesday night? So a lot more and more and more of it became logistics or administrative instead of time with the kids. And for many, many pastors, they're thinking, well, I want to preach. I'm going to be up front and I'm going to preach and everybody's going to love me and people are going to come to Christ. Isn't this fantastic? And yeah, some people will love you and some will come to Christ and some won't like what you say, no matter what you say. In fact, you could do everything perfectly and some people won't like you. And that's hard. I'm a people pleaser. I want to make everybody happy and you can't.
Right.
So you have to do what God wants you to do. And there are people that'll be in your congregations that want to control, that really like to control services and control pastors. It takes a lot of wisdom to deal with that. And for even a mid-sized church, you're going to have a lot of administrative skill. Small churches, definitely. The senior pastor has to do all the administrative stuff usually. And in a very large church, you know, ours, we had a guy over the business administrative, but I'm sure the lead pastor still had a lot. You think you're just going to preach, maybe go visit people once in a while.
Yeah.
You find yourself having to do confrontations, sometimes very difficult confrontations.
Mm-hmm.
Pleading with people to make better decisions and then watching them make terrible decisions. And I'm sure that's how God, just a little taste of how God feels when we make horrible decisions. And sometimes I've seen pastors do things right and love people and do a phenomenal job, and a couple people got them ousted from that church.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then, in my opinion, then, you know, God called them. People can't uncall them. So they're still called. They just have to find where God has called them now. Yep. But then they're saying, I don't know if I can ever love or care like that again.
Yeah.
Can I care? Can I trust like that again? But those false expectations where you're going to come in and preach and everybody's going to love you and a whole bunch of people are going to come to Christ. And that was a big one for my graduating class. They all expected they were going to walk out of that seminary and they were going to be in this massive church.
Yeah,
right. As the lead pastor.
Right.
That they're, you know, these churches are lined up to take them on as the lead pastor. And the reality was that, I mean, I think there were 9,000 pastors searching for every 100 open positions.
Yeah.
So the reality is most of them had to start in a church of under 100.
Mm-hmm.
Surprise. That's the reality. And they're saying, well, wait, I graduated. And I'm thinking, well, congratulations, you and everybody else.
Yep.
But you have to go where God calls you.
Right.
And sometimes God's calling you to minister to a small congregation.
Yeah.
My dad has always done that for many, many years. And God calls you where you're supposed to be.
Yep. Yep. Oh, that's true. And there's nothing wrong with it. I mean, my father did the same thing, pastored in a lot of smaller churches and a lot of guys wouldn't have taken. But you know what? The ministry that he did, you know, he changed just as many lives and had an impact on the kingdom just like anybody else. So
you
really dive into a section where you're taking on some really tough issues and you hit on what you call ministry landmines.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that's really come to light, and I don't want to end the podcast without hitting on this a little bit. I wish we had more time to talk about this alone, and we probably should do a special edition at some point and talk about this, because I do feel like this one is something that the enemy is using in a deeper, darker way, more than ever, like. We've had some high-profile leaders in the last year that have taken their own lives, and so the idea of anxiety and depression, when I hear those news reports, it just hits me to the core. Because these are my brothers in arms, you know, that are falling, and to their own hand, it feels like, even though we know it's an attack of the enemy, that takes them down. But what have you learned about these kind of things? Because this is something that, again, leaders are scared to talk about,
absolutely.
And the church is scared to talk about. But this is something that's driving leaders away from ministry in too many numbers. So what have you learned? And what can you say to a leader that may be struggling in this area?
That you are not alone. Mm. You are absolutely not alone. We've got to change this culture of hiding and trying to project perfection. There is no perfection. We live Facebook lives where everything seems so perfect.
Yeah.
No one is. And it's exactly what we were just talking about, where if somebody's feeling burnout, stressed out, apathetic, hurting, they feel like they can't say anything. So they stuff it down. And eventually you start seeing signs where they're missing things. They're sick too much, or it's busting out of them in emotional outbursts. It keeps going. Okay. If it doesn't get dealt with then, and they keep stuffing it down. Pastors are rated on the same high stress burnout level as social workers and clinical psychologists.
Mm-hmm.
So we deal with the public. We deal with tragedy. We deal with the most gut-wrenching stuff all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And many times we just internalize it. So if you can't talk to people about it, some people feel like they can't talk to people in their church. Understandable. Some of it you can't because of confidentiality.
Right.
You feel like you can't tell your people above you that you're struggling. You can't say a word about that. There does still seem to be some stigma for some pastors on going to counseling. I say go to counseling.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. That is one more way God can minister to you and help restore you. I say use every tool in your arsenal, anything that God can give you there. I say definitely counseling. Another thing that I really recommend is coaching. Mm-hmm. And I know you, I hope you don't mind me giving you a plug, Tom, I know that you do some coaching.
Yep.
And I also know if they're sitting there at home thinking, well, he has no idea what I've been through. I think you'd be the most empathetic to be able to hear them and give them some strategies.
Yeah.
I would say you do not want to ignore it long. If you think about it, like in my van, I had a low tire light for the longest time. And I'll be honest, I was thinking it's just so cold. That's why my low tire light keeps coming on and it's annoying. And I finally went in for my oil change and I asked them, hey, I've got a low tire light. It's probably just on because of the cold. And they came out with a nail this long had been in my tire. And he said, it is a miracle that tire did not blow out on you on the interstate.
Sure.
So you can ignore it and stuff it down and ignore it and stuff it down. But eventually there's going to be a blowout.
Yeah.
And I think what happens is I don't think a lot of these pastors plan to take their own life. It's in a moment of despair, a moment of just stress that they can't deal with anymore. Mm-hmm. And they feel like they have no one to call, no one to turn, no one to talk to.
Right.
And the enemy does love to make you feel isolated. Like you're the only one and there's no one to talk to and no one cares, or that you're a failure for feeling this way.
Right.
No, you are not a failure at all. It's completely normal to have ridiculous amounts of pressure on you as a minister. And unfortunately, you know, I talk about the pitfalls that pastors face. A lot of those bad scandals that make the news start off as coping mechanisms to deal with the horrific pressure and stress of ministry.
Yeah.
Because they're saying, I can't talk to anyone and I'm all alone. And I'm obviously failing because I feel this way, because I have anxiety and depression. I can't cope with this. So they start, you know, it may be spending. They're spending and spending and it gets out of control. Or it's a substance abuse. That's been on the rise with pastors, too. Yeah. I will just say it. It has been on the rise with pastors in hiding. I was thinking of Perry Noble. Mm-hmm. I love his sermons. Such a compassionate pastor, and had to step down due to alcoholism. I can't imagine the stress that that man was under on a weekly basis. I can't imagine at a church that size, just insane amount of stress and pressure. And when you feel like you can't talk to anybody, the coping mechanisms keep escalating. The coping mechanisms in secret keep escalating. Especially to try to suppress the emotional outburst so people don't catch on, which they're going to catch on. Yeah. It's going to spill out.
Yep, it sure will. And I'm glad you've said that. And it is something that, again, if you're a leader, you need to take stock and think about what she's saying, and that you are not alone, and that you do need to reach out, and there are safe places to do that. And yes, I echo the counseling. I've put myself into the counseling. It was a huge help with my struggle with anxiety and depression. I've been there, so yes, I can empathize. I've been there. I had a lot of physical toll taken on my body from stress and that kind of thing. So yeah, you don't want to let that go, and you can. There is ways to have victory, and you can, and I'm a walking testimony of that. I think God's pulled me through a lot of different things, and so by all means, if you're listening to this and you're sensing that, wow, I need some help, hey, please reach out, you know, reach out to a fellow minister, reach out to somebody on the KMC, reach out to me, reach out to Tricia. We're here. Yes. We would love to help you.
Absolutely.
You know, last question here as we get ready to wrap up is I'd love to know what's your hope for this book? What do you hope people will take away from it as they read it?
That's an excellent question. I don't know if you know Vanessa Meyer. She's a fellow author. Mm-hmm. I had her read the book and I said, if you could sum it up, what would your major takeaway be? And she said, what I got from the book is I am not alone. Mm. That this is an illusion of isolation, yeah. That we all are fighting the same battles as ministers. We are not alone, that these things happen, but there is hope.
Yeah.
There are strategies that we can take to kind of protect ourselves. There's two things I'd like to see happen. The first would be that all of us take the steps to try to ensure that we can be in ministry for the long haul. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of those outlined in the book, including having a strong support structure.
Yes.
That is even outside your own ministry.
Mm-hmm.
And know that is, you know, those listening, that's not a joke. I mean, like, yeah. Friends and right. Hobbies and a counselor, therapist, things like that. You have to have that strong support structure, and it takes intentionality to build that. It takes work to build that, but it is possible. Another major important strategy is to make sure, like you said, that you are taking your days off, you are taking your vacation, you're taking Sabbaths.
Yes.
Sabbaticals.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the pastors don't even know if their church offers them because they've never checked.
Right, right.
You got to look for the warning signs and confront them when they hit. You have to be keeping your marriage strong. All of these things are outlined in the
yeah.
book. But then the second thing that I'm really hoping is that maybe somebody's listening to this or reads the book and they've been out of ministry for a while. And they figure they're never going back because they got hurt, or they figure they failed, or they're the only ones that this happened to, or that God is done with them, that they're benched. They're now the B player that has to sit on the bench.
Right.
And maybe the Holy Spirit will deal with them and they will say, God didn't discard me.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah.
God didn't bench me.
Right.
And what does God have for me now?
Yeah.
What ministry does God have for me now?
That's right. Hey, thank you so much, my friend, for sharing your heart and for writing this. And I do recommend, you know, get this and take a look at it and share it with some others. Because it is, there's some really important things, and both of us are very passionate about this idea of keeping people in ministry. We want to see people stay in it for the long haul. We're going to put a link that you can pick this book up on Amazon right now. It's available, and so go out and grab it and take it and use it, apply it. And if you are stuck, feel free to reach out. Tricia, how can people connect up with you if they have questions or have, you know, they want to connect with you?
Oh, I really hope they do. I'm on Facebook under Pastor Tricia, T-R-I-S-H-A. Same on Instagram, Pastor Tricia, T-R-I-S-H-A. Twitter, it's P Tricia Peach. So I'm on Twitter. Trying to think where else they can find me. Oh, my website, kidman.ninja.
There you go.
Which I think you know Jared Lilly.
Uh-huh.
He's still bitter because I got that one first. I didn't know he was after it, and I had trademarked it first. He's like, no! Kidman.ninja.
Yeah, that's all right. Hey, Jared, he's a good guy. He's got a good new podcast, yes. Kidman Rocks. I love it. I think that's pretty cool. I'm glad to see more leaders getting into this as well. So, hey, again, thanks. Again, guys, if you're looking and you need some help, you need some encouragement, maybe you're stuck and you need some coaching, please reach out. We would love to help you. So God bless. Thanks for listening to this edition of the KMC.
You've
You've been listening to the Kids Ministry Collective podcast. We hope you've been informed, encouraged, and entertained for these few moments. If you'd like to connect with us, we encourage you to join the Kids Ministry Collective Facebook group or contact me on Twitter at PTBump. We'd also love for you to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. It'd also mean a lot if you'd leave a review for us so that we can help others learn about this podcast. Our goal of the KMC comes from Proverbs 27:17. As iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. We hope you'll join us again real soon for another KMC podcast.